From Given, this is Purposing, the podcast that lifts the lid on how to run a truly purpose-driven business. I'm Becky Willen, and with the help of leaders at some of the world's most recognized brands, I'll be demystifying this often misunderstood topic into clear, actionable advice you can use in your own business. This week, I'm joined by Susan Allen OBE, CEO at Yorkshire Building Society. Susan is leading the organisation at a time when the mutual sector has never been more important. In this conversation, you'll hear the difference mutuals can make, both in financial services and in society, why creating the right culture is central to delivering social good and commercial success, and what it takes for leaders to embed purpose meaningfully so it shapes decisions from the boardroom to the branch floor. But before all that, let's step back and explore the journey that shaped Susan's purpose-led approach to leadership.
I grew up in a family where my mum felt it was very important to make a difference in the communities we lived in. So my mum was a solicitor, but she did so many things in our communities. She campaigned on behalf of the travelling community. She campaigned for improved legislation around rape and support for victims. She campaigned for better buses in our local area. So I had this great sense of, you know, it's your responsibility to do something to improve things around you.
Banking wasn't always the plan. In fact, her journey into finance began at a time when opportunities felt scarce. So it was really all through chance and opportunity rather than by design.
I grew up in Ireland at the end of the 1980s. There was a recession on. When I was offered the opportunity to come for a second interview for NatWest, I came to the interview and did all the psychometric tests and answered everything completely honestly. And the next day, the person interviewing me said, "We'd like to offer you a job." And I thought, oh my goodness, maybe I was meant to be in banking.
As her career progressed, life threw in a different kind of challenge, one that brought real leadership into sharp focus, balancing a demanding role with the realities of caring for her parents.
You know, one of the things that I think is really important for all of us is that we're able to bring our whole selves to work. And for me, that really came to life when I was supporting my mom through her journey with Alzheimer's. And I look back at that time now and think, oh my goodness, I'm just not quite sure how I got through. Full-time job, teenage kids, traveling to support mom. One time I remember my dad also being ill and I was thinking, oh, I've got so much to do at work. And colleagues said, you need to go. And, you know, I'm so glad I went because I got to see him while he was still able to speak and spend time with him before he passed away.
Today, that experience continues to shape her approach to leadership, blending ambition with care and leading with empathy and impact.
I want to work in and create great environments that make a difference for the colleagues that work there, that allow them to show up as themselves and to fulfill their potential. Since my mum passed away, I had the opportunity to join the Alzheimer's Society board as a trustee. And that is something that really does also give me joy. I hope in a little way, you know, I'm continuing that history of my mom and doing things that are outside your role to try to have a positive impact in some small way.
So Susan, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good to be here, Becky.
So let's get straight into it. In the UK financial services sector, there are basically two kinds of retail organisations. You've got banks and you've got mutuals. But only around one in five people in the UK understand what mutuality is. So let's start there. What is a mutual and where did the idea of mutuality come from?
A mutual is an organisation that's owned by its members. And those members can be customers, they can be employees, or they could be policyholders. What's really interesting, though, is that with no shareholders, every penny that a mutual makes is reinvested in the business to make the business better for its members, or is returned to the members in the form of something dividend. So it's really quite different to a shareholder-owned business, and it enables mutuals to provide better levels of service and to be really focused on the needs of their members. Mutuals actually came from 18th and 19th century cooperatives, and in fact, the very first building society, Richard Ketley's, was started in 1775 in Birmingham, actually started in a pub where people came together to put their funds together to help people to get a house and to get a boat. And at one point, there were actually 750 societies in existence in London and in the provinces by 1860.
Wow. So this is an idea that's been around for a few, several hundred years, actually. But actually, I think it's also an idea that feels especially relevant today. And actually, the government here in the UK has recently pledged to double the size of the sector. So that's mutuals and cooperatives. You've touched on this already, but why are successful mutuals such a good thing for their members, for society, and even for the economy at large?
Well, let me just give you a sense of the scale of the building society sector in the UK today, because I think this does surprise people. And there are 42 building societies in the UK today. They serve 26 million members all across the UK, and they've got total assets or lending of almost £650 billion. So they are a really significant part of the UK economy. And together with their subsidiaries, building societies have helped 3.5 million families and individuals to buy a home. In total, residential mortgages are £485 billion, which is 23% of the UK mortgage market. And in addition, building societies help people save and build financial resilience. And today, across the building society sector, there are more than 23 million people saving with building societies, getting access to better rates than they would from high street banks, and accounting for about just short of 20% of all UK cash savings in the UK, and 40% of cash ISA balances. So building societies are really significant. What's also important is that the building societies, given their history, are based all around the UK. In fact, none of the building societies have got their headquarters in London. And they're providing great jobs and great employment to communities all around the UK. In addition, we've got, between all of us, about 1,300 branches, which is almost 40% of the financial services branches in the UK. And the sector employs over 52,000 people. So that's a great contribution to society. Add to that the focus that building societies have, not just on serving their members in a traditional sense, but also supporting the communities they operate in. And that adds up, I think, to a really important contribution to UK PLC.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got real actual economic power within the sector. You've got a regional employment base, so outside of London, you know, I guess a disproportionately high number of branches compared to, you know, the number of sort of current accounts and saving balances, I guess, that exist in the sector. And I think because you don't have shareholders, that means that you're not so focused on that quarterly reporting cycle, which I guess means as organizations, you can think longer term, you can think bigger about the role that you play in society. And that's where that focus on community positive impact, as well as the impact on your members' lives, comes in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can think differently. We can think differently, and we can do some things differently. One small example at Yorkshire Building Society, we've been thinking about the need for people to have more protection, so insurance, home insurance, life insurance, and we've worked with other providers to provide products, but we are providing those commission-free for our members, because actually we think it's important that people have protection, and we don't make a single penny from those arrangements, unlike, you know, other commercial arrangements. So we can do some things differently, But stepping back, you know, building societies, I think, have got a really important role to play in providing difference in UK financial services. We are a different type of organisation, and I think diversity is good. We provide a different type of service. You're quite right about the branches. You know, for us, what drives our high branch footprint is the wishes of our members. You know, they value the branches. Even those members who don't come to branches value having branches and knowing that they can come in and speak to one of our fantastic colleagues or call us in our UK call centres. And because that's important to our members, that's part of our investment in the business. So that's part of reinvesting their funds to deliver great service to them. And that's a different way of thinking to a fully commercial organisation. I should say that one of the misnomers is people think that we're not commercial organisations. Of course we're a commercial organisation. Because if we don't invest well, if we don't deliver what our members need, if we don't have all the good disciplines of risk control and risk management, we wouldn't be able to thrive and survive. So it's really important that we are actually a very commercial organization, but we're driven by a different ambition, I think, to an organization that is existing heavily to return profits to shareholders.
So you're CEO at Yorkshire Building Society. Where does YBS fit into the mutuals landscape? Can you tell us a little bit about the business, the history of the business, sort of where you are today?
We were founded actually in 1864 as Huddersfield Equitable Permanent Benefit Building Society. That's a bit of a mouthful. YBS is a bit snappier. But at that time in 1864, a dentist, a shoemaker and a plumber came together and they met every morning from 5 to 8 a.m. in a single room in Huddersfield and created what is today the third largest building society in the UK. So when you think from very simple beginnings, at the end of the first year, there were just six borrowers. And they had assets of just over £4,000. So that's where we started. If we look at where we were at the end of 2024, we had £52 billion in savings that our members trust us with. And we provided 41,000 new residential mortgages last year, a very significant portion of those going to first-time buyers. So the size and scale of the organization has changed completely in that time. And our purpose remains the same, which is to provide real help with real life, so tangible help for people in real lives every day. We're also supporting various charities over that period, and currently we're working with a wonderful charity called Fair Share, and we're aiming to provide them with £1 million to invest in over 2,500 people, helping them to get onto the job ladder and to go through apprenticeships. So we really do a lot of work that we think goes beyond profit.
So, and you joined the business in 2023 after establishing a career in mainstream banking. What were some of the big differences that you discovered working in a mutual? And was there anything that really surprised you?
I was really delighted to see this sort of longevity of colleagues within the organization. That's an absolute asset because you've got people who really understand how things work and we've built strong relationships with our customers. I think that there were some things on the other side. The organization hadn't really gone through that much change in recent years. So change, even changing small things can be quite difficult. And pace, I would say the pace was certainly quite different to the pace I was used to at the larger organizations. Mm. So for me, the challenge was actually, how do we make sure that we can continue to compete, continue to deliver for our members, continue to innovate, in fact, speed up innovation to meet their needs because customers' needs are changing all the time. How do we move faster? How do we inject it a little more pace, but without losing the things that make Yorkshire Building Society so special? They were some of the challenges, I think, coming in, is how to balance this carefully, the history and the culture, with the need to move forward and to adapt.
And I guess as part of that balancing, within the first year of joining YBS, you decided to refresh the corporate strategy, but you didn't look at your purpose until more recently. So what informed that decision at the time and what's changed to invite you, I guess, to look at the purpose?
So when I arrived, as I mentioned, the organization had not had that much change for a number of years, but actually, when I arrived and from the period I joined, there was quite a lot of change in the senior leadership team. In fact, 1 year into my tenure, we had changed every single person on the executive committee. So there was quite a lot of change. We also had a new chair and some new non-exec directors join the board. So there was already quite a lot happening in the organization. I did feel the need to do a strategic refresh. In fact, there'd been a plan, a strategy that ran to the end of the of 2023, the year I joined. So in any event, the organization was waiting for a new strategy. So we did a really comprehensive piece of work on strategy. We also looked at our purpose. We looked at our behaviors. And when I looked at those things, I actually thought the behaviors we had seemed really sensible, authentic to YBS and should remain the same. I felt the purpose, real help with real life, had a lot of affection in the organization. People understood real help with real life. It had driven the organization and I didn't feel the need to change everything. You know, sometimes people will come in and will want to change everything. Actually, I was trying to protect the things that had made the organization special. So I was really comfortable to leave Real Help with Real Life as it was to provide some continuity from the past. As the new team came in and we started to work through the pillars of the new strategy, it really became clear to me that although everybody could talk about Real Help with Real Life, when they did so in any detail, it was clear that Real Help with Real Life is actually so broad that it actually meant different things to different people. And our colleagues told us themselves through surveys that they felt that real help with real life wasn't showing up clearly enough in decision making. And I think the reason for that is because it was so broad. Almost anything can be real help with real life. So you run the risk of being really quite fragmented. It became really clear that we needed to sharpen the wording to make it more actionable. So sharpening the wording, and that was the work we set about over the last year to really get to the heart of what real help with real life really means, and to provide that clarity for our colleagues and for the organisation.
Well, let's spend a bit of time on that. So as a result of that work, what does real help with real life really mean? And can you bring to life what that looks like in practice at YBS?
So our definition, or our sharpened focus definition, is that real help with real life means members coming together to make good homes possible for more people. And I think that that statement has great lineage from the start of our building society 160 years ago, but it also talks to the future, that we want to do more for more people. So it, to me, it really blends that heritage and future. And that talks about the role we want to play in people's lives today as well. We want to help people, we want to provide real help with real life, helping people to build financial resilience and say, and helping people to get onto the housing ladder. And we want to support people in having good homes, because good homes are so important to people's physical and mental health and well-being. They're so important to society and to people's prosperity. So we want to support people in ways that really have impact. The purpose statement, though, even though it is sharper, we wanted to refine it and be even clearer about the areas of focus within that statement. So as well as the overarching purpose statement, we have picked five areas that we're going to really hone in on. And the first of these is being the number one choice for savers, because unless we provide great value for savers, we won't have, if you like, the fuel that keeps this engine running. So the savers provide the funds that enable us to then lend to help people get on the housing ladder. So if you think about this as a wheel, the center of the wheel is the savers, number one for savers. And around that wheel, we've got the five purpose areas. So the first of these is making homeownership more accessible. We believe that everybody should have access to good homes, whether they are rented or owned. We know that not everybody has access to the bank of mum and dad, and we want to support and help more people onto the housing ladder. So examples such as our 5K deposit mortgage, which helped people borrow up to £500,000 with just £5,000 deposit, are making it possible for more people to get on the housing ladder where that is affordable for them. And we want to do more to help make homeownership more accessible. But we also want to help people make the most of their homes. And examples would be our partnership with Snug, helping people get advice and guidance on how to make their homes more energy efficient. Thirdly, we want to support responsible landlords. We're the fifth biggest buy-to-let mortgage provider in the UK, and we have a responsibility to use that position to work with trusted brokers and landlords to make sure that good homes are being available for more people. And we work to the decent home standards, which we believe is really important. The fourth area is investing in good homes. Now, I think this is a new area for us that we'll be leaning into over the next 3 years. We want to explore this further. How can we partner with others? How can we work with our members and partners to support projects that create good homes in communities across the UK? So this is a new area for us that we'll be working on. And lastly, the fifth area, we want to call for change in the housing system. We are a significant lender in the UK. We're the third largest building society. We want to use our voice on things that matter to our members. And we will be using our voice, our knowledge and our understanding to call for change in the housing system and to lobby the government on issues that are important to our members.
And I think what's really interesting about that, Susan, is that I think it the way that you've explained that, I think, touches on a lot of the things that I think make a purpose a powerful idea for an organization. The fact that it speaks to both the core business, so core products and services, the experience that you create for members and customers, but also speaks to the role that you play beyond the products and services, the role that you can play in creating change in the system, whether that is through relationships that you have with landlords, you know, the way that you might be able to invest or catalyze investment to actually create more good homes in the future, and the way that you use your voice as a sort of powerful brand. That I think that that balance between the sort of BAU and beyond BAU is a really important one, as well as the fact that I think it's great that you talk about the areas that you already are focusing on, as well as the areas that feel new, because I think a purpose won't create value for an organization if it describes all the things that you're already doing. You know, it's got to create some stretch. It's got to create some ambition. It's got to be an idea that can guide you into new spaces. And I think that distinction between doing more of the things that you've already started, like the 5K mortgage, which I think is brilliant, as well as perhaps new areas, I think it gives you that sense of sort of long-term direction that I think will be really helpful to guide an organization that is in a sector that's going through a lot of change at the moment.
I think you pick on some really important points there, Becky. And it reminds me that one of the things I feel in this sector is a huge, and in this organization, is a huge sense of responsibility. Those people you gathered in a room at Huddersfield, think what they started with, £4,000 at the end of the first year, so now £52 billion of assets in the organization. And they had ambition, and I think it's really important that we have ambition, that we aren't just curating the status quo, that we're thinking about how do you reinvent a building society for today, and where can we make a difference today? And that has to build on the strengths that we have that have been built over many years, but it also has to think about how we remain relevant. And the great thing is that we're so close to our members, we can listen to them, we can understand what's happening in their lives, and we're reacting and responding to that. So we're using all of our skills and experiences, but we're also listening to our members. What is it that's challenging them today in their real lives, and how can we respond? And our products, whether it's a 5K mortgage or it's some of our products that help people to save, are really informed by research. You know, one of the areas that we did some research was on financial resilience. And what was really interesting there was the power of regular saving. And this sense of the purpose showing up, real tangible help in real life, is important, but so is an ambition to do more, to help more people across the UK, to be present in different ways for our members. Because that's really the history of going from, you know, a few people in a room to the third largest building society in the UK.
So, of course, getting to a credible, inspiring, actionable articulation of your purpose is a really important thing to do. But of course, it's only the first step, because if a purpose is going to create value and impact for an organization and for its members, customers and society, it needs to lead to change within an organization. And that means that businesses need to deliberately embed and activate the purpose across their decision making, ways of working and so on. What are the plans at YBS to make sure that that happens, that this doesn't sort of end up as a lovely statement that everyone feels good about, but actually doesn't change things and lead to better outcomes?
Yeah, I think it's really important that the purpose is brought to life every day. It isn't just a statement on a wall. It's not just some nice words. It has to live. But if it's going to live, then actually it has to guide our decision making, which means it will guide things we do and things we don't do. And it should, used effectively, absolutely help us to filter the key decisions and to really find a way to bring it to life. So that won't happen by itself. And what we want to do is a combination of, I think you described, hardwiring and softwiring, Becky. We need to build this into our business processes. So the start of this year was all about giving the clarity and the focus to the purpose. In H2 and in 2026, the real focus is going to be turning that ambition into action. And we're going to start to build foundations through this year, starting to build purpose into decision-making. So we're literally building it into the committee structures, to the way decisions are made, to the way papers and proposals are put forward. So it's going to be built in right from the outset for any new idea or any decision that we're making. We're talking to our colleagues to make sure that all of the colleagues across the organization understand what real help with real life really means, what this purpose means, and how we're planning to bring this to life, and how it will show up in member value. And so that's something that we're also doing, having more conversations and equipping colleagues at every level of the business to deliver on purpose. And they'll be having conversations across our organization and their teams about how they can play a role in bringing our purpose, our refreshed purpose, to life. But we also want to look outside the organization to look for potential partners to work with, to bring this purpose to life, to amplify the impact we can have for our members in society. And we're working on new propositions. So our teams are very excited to work on new propositions that will really, elevate and strengthen what we already have and offer some new distinct propositions in line with the purpose. So it's everything from building it into our processes to bringing to life in our products. It will show up in our induction programs. It will show up in our leadership programs. It will show up absolutely in the rooms where decisions are made. And that, I think, will be a process that is going to take a little while, though. I don't expect that we'll see this fully embedded in 12 or 18 months. This is a journey, overused expression, but it is a journey. And we will be taking stock as we go through there, using some very tangible measures and metrics to test how we're doing. And listening to our members, of course, listening to our members all the way through this, because we're here we exist to support them.
So we know that brilliant leadership, role modeling purpose is a really important part of what embedding a purpose successfully in an organization looks like. Susan, from your perspective, what makes a purpose-driven leader and what are some of the ways in which we'll be looking at embedding that at YBS?
One of the first things leaders have to do is provide clarity on direction. And I think that our purpose, our sharpened purpose statement, helps provide that clarity and direction. But it's also really important that then something happens. So provide the clarity of the direction and then set the tone for the organization. And that setting the tone is crucially important. You know, if we just talk about the purpose at a launch event, and then bring it up sporadically, that is not purpose-driven leadership. It is the role of leaders to role model how purpose comes to life every day. So I hold myself to account, I hold my senior team to account, I hold all of our leaders to account for making sure that purpose shows up in the way they work every day. And sure, we'll get it wrong sometimes, but making sure that you're coming back to how is what I'm doing contributing to moving this business forward? How is what I'm doing contributing to bringing our purpose to life? I think is a question that we have to ask ourselves, you know, if not every day, then at least find time every week to reflect. And we have to ask each other. And it's my job to create an environment where we can have those conversations, where we can challenge each other about how we are helping to make sure the purpose shows up, and that we can challenge each other about how we can do more to make a difference. And I think that visible leadership is incredibly important. People, our colleagues, listen to what we say, but more importantly, they look at what we do. If you're not authentic, then people see right through that. And you can say all the nice words about purpose, but if the way you operate and the way you behave is not consistent with that purpose, then people will understand straight away that it's not authentic. And if they don't see you as their leader living the purpose, then why should they? They will infer from your behaviors that actually it isn't really important. So I passionately believe in our business model. I passionately believe in our purpose and our opportunity to make a difference in the world and to make a difference for our members, to make a difference for the societies in which we operate. And it is incumbent on me to make sure that I let that show up in the way I operate and in my expectations of my team.
Susan, in really practical terms, how are you helping leaders create that consistency in terms of decision-making and how it's going to bring purpose to life?
Well, I realize that much as we all desire to live and role model a purpose every day, you do need some tangible tools to help you to do that, particularly when you're starting out before it becomes embedded. So one of the tools that we've put in place is a set of purpose prompts. So we've created a set of questions to enable us to really test purpose in our decision-making. Now, that doesn't have to just be in great big decisions. It can be in discussions in a branch, in how they're operating every day. And those purpose prompts have been rolled out to leaders, and we're now rolling those out more broadly across the organization. When you start trying to use them, they feel a little bit awkward. It's like, you know, I don't know, trying on a new coat or something. I don't know. It's trying on something new, doesn't quite fit, feel comfortable in the beginning. But actually, the more you use them, the easier it gets. And what they do is they make sure that we are really looking at an issue with purpose in mind. So the purpose prompts are really, I'd really recommend them to other organizations. It really helps you to bring to life your purpose in a really tangible way. in the decisions we're making.
And so looking ahead the next sort of 12 months or so, what are some of the things that people can expect to see from YBS?
So over the next 12 months, we'll be busy bringing our purpose to life. What people can expect to see is some new products that will help to bring that to life, but also a leaning into the brilliant service that we already provide to our members and customers across the UK. Our teams are committed to providing brilliant service, brilliant experiences to people, helping them save, to be the number one choice for savers, but also to help people get on the housing ladder. And we'll continue to do that, but in new and innovative ways. We'll also be exploring other partnerships, but they may take a little bit more time to come to fruition. And people will, I think, can expect to see us speaking up on the topics that matter to our members, as we have, but perhaps with even more vigour and commitment.
And how about longer term? Where would you like YBS and even the mutual sector to be in 5 years' time?
What I'd really love is for the mutual sector to be better understood, by which I mean, I think this is such an amazing sector. The fact that we are putting all of our profits either back in the pockets of our members through great rates or investing to create an even better business for them. It just isn't understood. And I would love the sector to be more understood. We have a job to do that ourselves and the other building societies to make that happen. I'd also like to see the sector playing an even more significant role in making a difference to tackling some of the housing challenges in the UK, helping people have more good homes, whether that's through shared ownership or more affordable and better quality rental properties. I think we collectively can make a difference. We can shift the housing market. And I want us to have shown collectively as a sector that being purpose-driven and commercially successful can absolutely go together.
Susan, thank you for being such a brilliant guest on Purposing.
Thank you, Becky.
Thanks again to Susan. Loads of brilliant ideas there. So here are a few things that I've taken from the conversation. The potential power of mutuals is just amazing. Without quarterly trading reports and shareholder pressure, they can be more focused on meeting the needs of members and customers. They can be more innovative and agile and act for the long-term benefit of society. Whenever we do research with customers, they tell us that they trust those different kinds of business models, so mutuals, cooperatives, and partnerships, the most. But only 20% of people understand what a mutual is. It's got to be time to change that. Having said that, the ownership structure of mutuals isn't enough to make an organization successful. That's where a clearly defined purpose can be a powerful tool to unlock agility and innovation. Creating a clear, focused, and actionable purpose, backed up with a plan to make it real across the organization, it's an important way to create organizational clarity, unity, and pace, the key ingredients for performance. And within this context, purposeful leadership is essential. You could have a brilliant purpose and the right plan, but unless you have a CEO who leads with their heart and brings compassion as well as ambition, you'll never be able to build a truly purpose-driven business. People just won't believe it. To me, Susan is such a brilliant example of a successful, purpose-driven leader. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you'd like more practical advice on building a purpose-driven business with brilliant insights from people like Susan, download the Insider's Guide to Purpose at givenagency.com/thinking.